Okay, so good morning. Thank you all for joining the session today. I'm going to be talking to you about all payer claims databases, commonly abbreviated to APCD, so I'll be using that acronym throughout. Just one more to add to your bucket of acronyms from this conference, as new and powerful sources for population health data. So I think I have to go over this. I have no financial relationships nor commercial conflicts of interest to disclose. Okay, so some of you may have heard of all payer claims databases, have used them before, know what they're all about, and I suspect the majority of you have never heard the term before and have no idea what I'm talking about. Both cases are fine. I really want this to be an all payer claims database 101, an overview. I'll go over what they are, what the most common public health uses are, provide some real world examples for how they're currently being used to support public health research, and finally, talk a little bit about the nationwide spread of APCDs and where we see the future of health information headed. So before we dive in, I did want to talk a little bit about who we are at Friedman Healthcare so you have some context. We're a healthcare consulting firm based in Boston, Massachusetts. We work on various health reform initiatives, things like performance measurement, community health assessments, cost containment projects, and we have a specific focus on APCDs. So we've in fact worked with 13 of the 17 states that currently have an APCD in implementation. So let's start with what is an APCD. An all-payer claims database is a large-scale database that systematically collects healthcare claims information from a variety of payer sources in the state. APCDs actually collect more than just healthcare claims data, which I'll get into in a second, but claims data is the central focus. And for those of you who have never worked with healthcare claims data is the record of the billing transaction, right, between a patient and a provider. So every time you go to your doctor, a specialist, every time you get and fill in a prescription, have any kind of procedure or test, a claim is generated, and that is what we collect in the database. So why do states build these APCDs? They build them so that they can have comprehensive cross-setting and cross-payer information on healthcare costs, quality, and utilization for their populace. So that cross-setting, cross-payer piece is really crucial and is really what sets APCDs apart from some of the other databases that you may be familiar with. So for example, I imagine folks in this room have experience working with hospital discharge data sets, cancer registries, immunization registries, and even administrative databases for specific payers. While these are all great databases, and I myself use them, they are limited in ways that the APCD isn't. So, for example, hospital discharge data is one setting of care, inpatient only. Cancer registries, immunization registries, also a certain condition. APCDs were able to capture cross-setting data, right? So inpatient, outpatient, and in our case, pharmacy, from all payer sources, and create a longitudinal profile of individuals to view their care as a continuum, right? So not just a particular episode of care, but also what came before and after it. Even if what came before and after was at a different facility, a different provider, or even if that person had a different health insurance plan. So again, APCDs, I said, collect claims data from a variety of payer sources. So you may be asking yourself, well, who are these payer sources? Payer sources do differ from state to state based on the enabling APCD legislation, but for the most part, they include commercial insurance providers, administrators of carved-out services like pharmacy benefits, behavioral health, and public programs, Medicaid, Medicare. Most APCDs, so most of the 17, also include student health plan data, third-party administrators, and self-insured plans. So I mentioned that APCDs don't only collect healthcare claims data. We also get information from the health plans on their individual plan members. So general information like gender, age, address, and increasingly we're also collecting ACA-related data elements. So for example, who is the primary care provider of that individual? Did they purchase their insurance through a state-based exchange? And are they part of a patient-centered medical home? Of course, like I said, right, bulk of the information is medical claims, so we see things like all of the visits, all of the procedures, all places of service, all admitting diagnoses, and of course all the cost information, right? So the charged amount, your copay amount, deductible amount, coinsurance, et cetera. In regards to pharmacy claims data, we see everything from the prescribing provider, where you had your medication filled, quantity dispensed, is it a new prescription or a refill, et cetera. About a third of all APCDs are also collecting dental claims data. And then finally, in APCDs, all of the payers submit information on all of the active providers in their network. So that includes, right, the physician's name, their physical location, their national provider ID, and also their entity affiliation. So are they a part of a physician group? Do they have admitting privileges at a certain hospital? So what don't APCDs collect? We don't get information right now from the VA, from Indian Health Service, or from TRICARE Champus. APCDs also don't capture data on federal employees, the uninsured, or private pay individuals who don't use an insurance intermediary to pay for their health care. Many states also don't capture claims data from certain commercial payers who have a small fragment of the market as measured by total number of covered lives or total gross revenue from claims. And finally, and this is kind of the most critical piece to remember about what APCDs don't collect, is we don't collect clinical data. So whereas we will see that you had a blood test or imaging work done on such and such date at a certain hospital, we don't get the results of that blood test, we don't know your HbA1c levels, we don't see those x-rays. So that last point, right, that we don't get clinical data, that has garnered a lot of questions and skepticism, and for the most part folks say, well, isn't the ability to leverage APCD data to support public health research limited? So what I'd like to do is show you why that's not true and how people are using it today. So here are the most common public health uses for APCDs. I just want to go provide some examples of these, and then I'll touch on a few others that aren't on this list. So let's start with cost transparency. Why do we need cost transparency? Well, everybody I'm sure in this room knows that the U.S. healthcare system is the most expensive one in the world. I think we spend something like 18% of our gross economy on health, healthcare spending, as opposed to 10% for other industrialized nations. And of course, this healthcare spending means that we have less money to spend on other things. So since we spend so much money on our healthcare and it is the most expensive, we should be the healthiest. Right? Well, not really. So Americans actually live shorter lives and are in poorer health than their counterparts in other industrialized countries. Even white, upper income, insured, college-educated individuals are in poorer health than their counterparts. So what does this mean? It means that we need to figure out where this healthcare spending is going and get it under control. And one of the ways we can do that is to identify the healthcare cost drivers in the state and see where there is variation in costs among providers and facilities for the very same services. So that's what we get from the APCD. So I'm going to show you the first example. Okay, so here you're looking at the public-facing portal of the New Hampshire All-Payer Claims Database. It's free to use. You can come up to me. I'll give you the URL after the session. You can go on it today, play with the data, check it out yourself. So again, we're looking at aggregated claims data. And here, users can log in, select a procedure they're interested in. Here, I've selected outpatient MRI for a knee. Yep. You can enter your zip code, the geographic radius you're interested in, and if you're interested in seeing the costs of a certain healthcare insurance plan. Here's the output. You're able to compare costs across the different healthcare facilities within that geographic radius. So for example, we're looking at the procedure, the outpatient MRI for a knee, $860 at Concord Orthopedic Center, twice that amount at Exeter Hospital. Okay. So you can kind of take it from there. You know, we have to figure out why that is. And in this way, state agencies and policymakers are using APCDs to explore cost variation in their state's health system, identify excess spending, and where possible, tighten regulations. Population health trends. So here, again, using aggregated claims data, you're looking at the public-facing portal of the Colorado APCD. Again, free to use. Anyone can log in. And here, users can look at geographic variation in disease prevalence. We're looking at asthma prevalence rates. You can actually hover over each at the county level, asthma prevalence rates at the county level. You can actually hover over a county, see the asthma prevalence rates as measured by DRG codes on claims data and admitting diagnoses, and see the prevalence rate in that county as benchmarked against the state average. So here, I think it's Prowers County, I'm looking at 5.32% asthma prevalence, about twice the state average. Okay. Geographic mapping like this also shows us inter-county variation. So for example, I know it's teeny tiny, but take my word for it that there are adjacent counties up there, one of which has a 1 to 2% prevalence rate, one has greater than 5%. Okay? So again, that raises certain questions as to why. I mean, I do just want to put a plug in that while this example I'm showing you shows the data at a county level, most APCDs do take requests from researchers for more granular data. You can see information like this, not just at the county level, at the city level, subdivision, and even by block. Okay? If kind of suppression rules, if you're familiar with CMS suppression rules, that works out. In addition to the disease prevalence data, the Colorado APCD also shows on the public-facing portal ER visits, all-cause 30-day readmissions, total cost of care, hospital visits. Here's another example. This is taken from the Utah APCD, and here we're looking at prevalence of antidepressant use by county for females. This data is based on aggregate pharmacy data, and again, we can see significant variation among adjacent counties for prevalence of antidepressant use. Okay. So in addition to cost transparency and population health trends, researchers are increasingly using APCDs to analyze appropriateness of care and overutilization. And so what I'd like to do is in the final example show you an example of this. I did borrow this next example from Dr. Adam Zudley from the University of California at San Francisco. He recently presented these findings at the National Association of Health Data Organizations conference. So Dr. Dudley's group looked at APCD data to take a look at cataract surgery in California for Medicare beneficiaries. So as most of you know, cataracts is a clouding of the lens of the eye and affects vision. Most cataracts are related to aging, and in fact, cataracts is very common in older folks. You can see that according to this National Eye Institute graph, there's something like 22 million cases of cataracts a year in the United States. The good news is that cataract surgery is not only the most common elective surgery in the elderly, it is also one of the safest and most effective types of surgery. Currently, there's about 2 million cataract surgeries in the U.S., and that is expected to increase by 20 or 30% with the aging of the baby boomers. And since cataracts is related to aging, it may not come as a surprise that about 80% of all cataract surgery is paid for by Medicare. Okay. What's also interesting, I realize I keep saying what's also interesting, but I think this stuff is really interesting, is that cataract surgery has become so streamlined and so low risk that it is also one of the only medical procedures that has definitive randomized control trial evidence that routine preoperative testing has absolutely no effect on outcomes. Okay, blood tests, cardiac stress tests, pulmonary function tests, not needed, only increases cost, has absolutely no effect on outcomes. The findings were so definitive that when they were published back in 2000, within two years, all specialty guidelines, so AHA, American Ophthalmology Association, American Association of Anesthesiology, all espoused these guidelines, said no pre-op testing needed prior to cataract surgery. These guidelines have been around for 10 years now, so we should expect to see no pre-op testing for cataract surgery, right? Well, oops. So what the research team did was they plotted the pre-op tests and visits as a function of the cataract surgery date. And what they found was that 52% of all patients in California who underwent cataract surgery had at least one completely unnecessary preoperative test performed, and that equated to $11 million a year in excess testing costs. Okay? But the 52% of patients that received a unnecessary tests, they weren't spread out evenly, right? So they weren't just as likely to be at one hospital than the other. The research team was able to identify what we call high utilizing providers and care teams that were performing unnecessary tests in 75% or more of all of their patients. And in fact, these high utilizing providers, while they only saw about a quarter of all cataract surgery patients, accounted for 83% of all unnecessary costs. Okay. I know I'm running out of time, but I just really want to touch on a few other uses. So health policy and program evaluation. So because we get that longitudinal profile, we can see how certain policies or initiatives affect health and health utilization. So for example, if your state is starting a smoking cessation program at the beginning of the year, do the claims data show an associated decrease in smoking-related ER visits or cases of emphysema in the coming months, okay? Consumer education I touched on, that's the public-facing portals. Prescribing patterns, right? We get pharmacy data, so we're able to see are certain drugs being prescribed most commonly for certain illnesses? Are certain providers prescribing opioids at a much higher rate than others, and for what? And are certain prescriptions being refilled at a rate that would suggest poor adherence to their medication? Okay. Episodes of care, again, so we can look at not just, you know, what are the costs of the knee surgery, right, but we can take a look at what are the costs of the knee surgery plus the pre-op tests plus the post-op physical therapy plus the pharmacy, right, so that full episode of care. Okay, so I know I'm done with time. I just want to show you how APCDs have spread across the country. The first one was in Maine back in 2003, and since then, so dark blue is where they exist, light blue is strong interest, which is a vague term, but I assure you it means strong interest. You can see them spread. We have 17 currently in existence, 20 states with strong interest. Oops. That's the profile today. Okay, so in conclusion, I'd encourage you to first identify whether or not your state has an APCD. If they do, please use the data. We know that data gets better as more folks use it. It will also give the APCD administrators in your state an opportunity to understand what kind of data folks are interested in and build up those reporting interests. And if you don't have an APCD, I encourage you to look for other metadata initiatives. Metadata initiatives are a central component of ACA. They're a part of almost every state innovation model grants if your state has one. And I'll end there, and I'll take questions at the end. Thank you.